telephone warriors. Anyone in the Northeast, anybody in the Midwest, to go to Pittsburgh now with video cameras. The troops are bought and paid for by offshore banks. Republic is falling right now. They are openly bringing in martial law. They have troops deploying in every major city. We need everybody to go to Pittsburgh who loves this country.
International media, government staffers, and protesters.
The G20 basically represent the largest nations which participate in the Western banking cartel, which I feel is behind a lot of the pain, anguish, and misery that exists in our world today.
This is such a police state there that they tried to talk to the military and talk to a spokesman last night. Defense Link put a press release out, and they said, no, we're not going to talk to you. Get out of here. Then they got their license number, had the police pose as Alamo rental car people from the county there, Allegheny County in Pennsylvania. They called them and said, your car's got no brakes. Bring it in. And they said, well, we're in the cordon at G20. We're news reporters. We can't get out till tomorrow. And they said, well, that's fine, because I'm a police officer with the Army and FBI, and you've all been put on terror list, and your life's over, boy. And we know you're a terrorist, and you were sneaking around the military base and ran. All lies.
Okay, so I just went over. They're going to have a guy come out and talk to us, or they said they'll get us a number to contact. He said the PAO. This is probably him right here.
Briefly, tell folks about last night. You guys pull up to the gate. You asked to talk to the public information officer. They called the police and lied and said that you were sneaking around.
Yes, sir. How's it going? We were responding to a news story that the National Guard was going to be masked to go into Pittsburgh. And could we get a comment on that?
We then pulled off to the side of the road where they instructed us to. We waited around 15 or 20 minutes. A representative came back. Immediately, he was hostile towards us. He did not like our credentials.
We're out of Austin, Texas, Channel 10.
Katie, can I see your credentials?
We tried to get as much information as we could. He refused to answer our questions. So then Rob asked him for his information and where we could contact him. Tomorrow, if we could get a word with him, he then gave it, and we left.
Speech, freely as reporter.
Yes, sir.
You guys have credentials for the G20? I can't. In the middle of the night, you come here tomorrow, we'll see if we can accommodate you. We're not going to.
I mean, we only got a few questions, man.
Yeah, we just have like four questions.
The answer's no. Not going to comment. No, I'm not. That's okay. We're going to deny the interview. If you get some credentials to get some that I can work with, I'll do it.
We didn't run away from anything. By the time that we had left, turned around, and exited the main military facility, there was another car parked on the other side of the road, waited for us to pass, followed us for an exit, then got off. And then we were shot when Douglas got a call trying to entrap him and have us go return our rental car for, quote-unquote, two more free days. When we didn't fall for that, he then came clean and said he was actually military personnel and he wanted to know whether or not we were terrorists, Alex.
And then he told Douglas, you're on a list now, pal, for the rest of your life.
Yeah, he did.
With pleasure. You ran from them. Is that true?
Absolutely not.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
Tyranny is here. The grim future foretold in 1984 has become reality.
In the not too distant future,
they're closing in!
Already the path has been chosen.
They said the market would drop by 4,000 points, blood would flow in the streets, and lions would be devouring children in the parks of Los Angeles.
Got the same story. It's just FBI training, but it was FEMA.
Do you believe that the military will fire on its people? Fire.
And they're turning their guns on us.
Already the path has been chosen. I did not set in motion decades ago. Decades ago. They're ending. Complete control.
Watch them become a god.
Watch him become a god. Watch people's heads roll.
Just like the Pied Piper.
Just like the Pied Piper. Let rats through the streets. We dance like a marionette. Swaying to the symphony of destruction. Acting like a robot.
Its metal brain corrodes.
Its metal brain corrodes. Take us
balls. Before the head explodes.
Before the head explodes.
We are seeing a globalist launch, worldwide destabilization campaign planned for close to 5 decades as the rats are being turned loose. So the population will beg the Pied Piper. And the point I was making back during the last break about the Liberty Movement, all of you that have warned your friends and family and been laughed at, the people that laughed at Ron Paul 3 years ago, the people that pilloried this broadcast and attacked us from every level. When I talk about don't give me this power, it is daunting to know that we are one of the leading salvos, one of the leading spears fighting the globalists that are aware of their program. We know the attack profile. We've been proven right so many times that all of us who know the score have incredible responsibilities. I do. You do. The Genesis Network. Everyone does. Other talk show hosts listening right now. This is so real. This is so big, what's happening in the world right now. And they have begun the dominoes to fall for global destabilization to create a crisis so horrible that the public will beg for world government. And I do not like the fact that I'm so prominent. I can feel the danger increasing. But it's a responsibility, and I passed the point of no return a long time ago, and so did you. Because even if you try to serve this system, folks, it's going to destroy you. So once you realize you don't really have a choice, you've got to fight it with every ounce of energy, with every bit of intellect, with your heart, with your soul, with everything. I just pray that God lead God and direct us, and that we repent for the things we've done, the decadence. The globalists have sold us corruption to make us weak, to make us rotten inside. None of us are perfect, but we need to get our hearts right with God. We need to all of us get our hearts right with God, because the crises that we're already in, the crises that are expanding and getting worse by the day, are going to be used to try to usher in planetary despotism, planetary enslavement. And I want people listening to realize the incredible historical crossroads that we all stand at the fulcrum of. What we do now will echo throughout human civilization. Don't be a spectator. Be involved. People aren't going to laugh at you now when you warn them. Many people who have been laughed at in the past, just average folks out there, tell me their friends, their family are listening now. And that is so positive. I am risking my life, my name, my treasure, everything, because corruption must be faced. It must be dealt with, or it will grow like a cancer out of control. And so if you look at this in a one-dimensional view, it's like, oh, great, a thug's being thrown out. But when you understand, good, Hosni Mubarak's been thrown out. But then you see the very same military people behind him step in, there will be no freedom. This is purely to drive up oil prices, to try to put people the media can call more extreme into power, and to try to have the buffer zone of the Middle East basically turn into a lake of carnage. Let me cover the news and I'm going to your phone calls. Hundreds protest in Iraq, TV station torched. This out of the Toronto Sun. Hundreds of protesters, inspired by unrest around the Arab world, took to the streets of the northern Iraqi city on Sunday, and at least 48 people were injured. A police official said security forces fired in the air when demonstrators chanted against corruption, tried to approach the headquarters of the Kurdistan Democratic Party, where clashes on Thursday killed two people and wounded dozens. And it just goes on from there. TV station's been torched. Dealing with the situation in Libya, it is being reported that military aircraft fire at Libyan crowds, and Al Jazeera's reporting, Reuters is also reporting that. And, you know, these are armed people. They've gotten arms either by taking them from security forces or they've been pre-armed. They've taken tanks. They were trying to take over a military base when this happened. If you can believe any of this, that does make them a military target. But, and if you don't think our military's been trained, if you try to take over a military base to kill you deader than a hammer, you got another thing coming. They're openly training the military. It's even in the Army Times going back 2.5 years ago and since then many times that they are, quote, preparing our military to, quote, pull triggers on the American people. In fact, I read from an Army report that was put out last year, Army Strategic Shock Report, says troops may be needed to quell U.S. civil unrest. Purposeful domestic resistance would require military to rapidly determine the parameters defining the legitimate use of military force inside the United States. We reported that in December 16th, 2008. See, they've all geared up for this. I mean, folks, I was a mainline kind of libertarian-style Ron Paul guy. I didn't get into Bohemian Grove and Skull and Bones and, you know, stuff like that. I was just, you know, a mainline libertarian. And I got on talk radio and TV 95, Radio 96, and people would send me documents, articles. I'd see an article about the police chief being Delta Force trying to pay him off in the San Antonio Express News. I'd call the chief up. Hey, I'm got a local radio show and a TV show in Austin. I'd like to come interview you. Alex Jones interviews Ali Philippus. It's in my film Police State 2000. Show up at his office, have an hour-long meeting, and he says Delta Force trying to buy off the town in a secret takeover operation. Then I interviewed Thomas Sanchez, emergency manager, Vietnam veteran, former Army intelligence, so he knows what he was seeing. He was approached. He came on my radio show. He was approached in Kingsville, down in South Texas, basically for a martial law takeover drill. And I'd go on air and talk about it. I mean, they've been preparing for at least 15 years at a breakneck speed for the total collapse of the U.S. And in all the training, it's stock market crash, dollar devaluation. And then the very banks that run America on record have done all of this. I mean, again, that's what's so frustrating for me. This is 100%. This is 100%. This is not my opinion. We told you all this was coming. I have been dreading this. But now, at a certain level, I'm almost like, well, at least, you know, we were right. But that's kind of sicky sweet. Leaves a bad taste in your mouth. But in a way, it's vindication, but then it's just confirmation, and it's, I use the analogy of being 11, 12 years old and getting off the school bus, and three or four, it happened a bunch of times, you know, 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds get around you and beat you up and punch you in the nose, and, you know, you try to fight back a little, but then it made me strong, you know, after it happened dozens of times. To the point by the time I was about 13, well, now when the 17-year-old came up, I just learned to savagely attack him and start punching him in the nose and doing whatever I can, headbutting him and just turning it loose. You know, it's almost like you're scared when the bully's walking up, but once they go ahead and swing, once you felt them hit you, it's like, boom, it's on. I'm not scared anymore. I'm going to open a can of you-know-what on you. And that which does not kill us only makes us stronger, as Nietzsche said. Don't agree with a lot of what Nietzsche said, but I certainly agree with that, the German philosopher. But it's so many emotions right now, because this is just another complete, total verification of everything we've said. And we know the globalists planned all this, and we know what it leads to next.
Highwayman, along the coach roads I did ride. and pistol by my side.
Well, there couldn't be a better time to have the editor and publisher of the Gloom Boom Doom Report, gloomboomdoom.com, economist Mark Faber. I can't go over his illustrious bio in the time we have, the next 25 minutes, but he, of course, graduated at 24 with a PhD in economics, magna cum laude, and he joins us from Thailand today, a real expert on world markets, especially what's happening in Asia. And I've got so much to discuss with him on oil, gold, what's going to happen with the Chinese. Could they dump a bunch of gold on the market? Where he sees everything going. We have to say his forecasting is among some of the most accurate in the world. Again, gloomboomdoom.com. Mr. Faber, good to have you here with us.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, well, you've got the floor from Thailand. What in the world is going on right now on this planet? What do you see happening?
Well, basically, we have to go back to the 1970s to fully understand what happened. In the 1970s, they printed money in the U.S., and commodity prices went ballistic. And they overshot on the upside because of the money printing. And after 1980, they then declined because as they went up too much, supplies came into the market, so all commodities went down until 1998. During the decline in commodity prices, no new mining was undertaken, no exploration took place, no new oil fields were looked for, because as prices went down, there was no economic reason to look for new oil. But then, after 1998, commodity prices started to rise, and because of the combination of the opening of China, the incremental demand from China, and also increasingly India and other emerging economies, commodity prices started to go up, and because of the money printing in the U.S. by this rather despicable character, Mr. Bernanke, they went ballistic. And so we have very high inflation in most countries, and in many countries this high inflation in food prices, energy prices, has had an impact on the wallet of the typical household. Because whereas in the U.S., we say a per capita income of $40,000, food is not a huge component in people's income in emerging economies, where, say, the per capita income in Vietnam, India, is only $1,000 per year. Food and energy make maybe 50% of people's income.
And, of course, you're now, I guess, alluding to what we see happening in North Africa. Libya, now it looks like, is basically falling to the rebellion. Reportedly, Muammar Gaddafi has fled to Venezuela. What is driving these revolutions that we're seeing popping up around the world? And if it is overall dollar devaluation and commodity increases, how much worse is it going to get? I mean, how bad is the inflation going to get?
Well, the really big question is whether these unrest we have in Tunisia, Libya, Bahrain, Egypt will spread to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. If they do, it will be very difficult for the U.S. to take sides, because on the one hand, the U.S. has supported the vicious regimes of a Mr. Mubarak. They have supported the royal family of Saudi Arabia. They never asked Saudi Arabia to have reforms and democracy, whereas they embargo countries like Myanmar. So where will they stand? What can they do? And the CIA is completely useless. They had no idea that these unrest would start. They had no ground information that something was going on. And so the U.S. and particularly this incapable president that the U.S. has no way to react properly.
Mr. Faber, I mean, looking at this as an economist and as a forecaster, obviously it's spreading. The inflation is intensifying. How bad in the near term and the long term do you see the inflation getting? I know you don't want to, you can't make exact predictions, but what do you see happening in the to the dollar? What do you see happening to gold, silver, other commodities? I mean, they're skyrocketing right now.
Well, I would say the following. I have a large subscriber base. I asked all my subscribers to please send me an email if they have the feeling that their cost of living were going up by less than 5% per annum. I didn't receive a single email. And so I think that the inflation or the cost of living increases in the U.S. and elsewhere is much higher than what the government is publishing. And I think this is having a negative impact on consumption because obviously the cost of necessities, insurance, taxes, food, energy, is going up very rapidly. And my answer to all this is the worse the economic conditions will become, the worse the geopolitical conditions will become, the more Mr. Bernanke and his fellow Fed governors will print money. And so I'm not ultra bearish on equities. I think they will now correct because the market is way overbought. And so we can easily have a correction of 10-15%. But I think as soon as the market drops, say, 15-20%, QE3 will come into play. And all that is favorable for silver and gold. Now, the question is gold and silver expensive or is it cheap? Say, in 1999, you could buy an ounce of gold for $252. Now it's $1,400. Is it cheap or expensive? Well, in a money-printing environment, it's very difficult to decide what is expensive and what is cheap. Because the function of money to be a unit of account and a store of value is being lost through the money printing. And so my view would be, yeah, relative to 99, the price of gold is expensive at $1,400. But relative to the money printing, maybe not. And so my advice to all your listeners is to gradually accumulate gold. Don't trade it, don't buy it on margin, just gradually accumulate.
Wealthy people, you know, truly wealthy that I've run into here in Austin. And of course, you obviously have run into about a million times more than I have. You know, we're running in the highest circles.
Well, I don't think so. I'm a social defender.
but I mean, you know, just running into well-known, you know, people off record told me 4 years ago that the U.S. and the entire world economy was going to collapse via the derivatives and that they were basically fleeing. I mean, I even know about John Wayne. Part of his family just ran off to Central America. I mean, so many people are evacuating. Some of the richest people in Israel, it's been in the news, are evacuating Israel. I mean, what do the elite know that the general public hasn't been let in on, Doctor?
Well, there's another element. Because of the advent of computers, the fax machine, And in the last 20 years, the internet, if I'm a hedge fund manager, if I'm a well-to-do person, I can run my business from anywhere. I sit here in the north of Thailand. I have Bloomberg, I have computer access, I have everything. So I don't need to be in a big city. I can choose a lifestyle to be in a small city and have a larger space, or to be in the countryside.
So that's a big part of the shift. I had a caller earlier who, before you came on, who wanted me to ask you about gold mining supplies versus demand, and could China or some other country or group dump a bunch of gold on the market and really knock it down far? Or is, from what I've read, China is mining a lot but consuming it and selling it because of demand?
Well, first of all, if you look at the international reserves at the hands of central banks and the wealth accumulation over the last 20 years among well-to-do people, the international reserves have grown from $1 trillion to now $9.5 trillion. The Chinese, they have $2.5 trillion. The Asians have 70% of the $9.5 trillion. The Asians, they have 2% of these reserves invested in gold. Very little. The Indian, the Reserve Bank of India bought, a year ago, 200 tons at roughly $1,040. Now it's $1,400. The Chinese, it's kind of a loss of faith for them to go into the open market and buy and announce that they're buying gold. But what they produce, they keep, and they have given incentives and created programs in China whereby individuals can now buy gold.
So they're bullish on gold?
Yeah, I mean, for sure they're not bullish on the U.S. dollar, and they're not bullish on Mr. Obama, and they're not they were never bullish on Mr. Bush.
So in layman's terms, Doctor, you've got all these countries sitting on trillions of dollars of dirty crud paper, not worth the, you know, paper it's written on. And so and so the entire magnetic or gravitational pull is only towards metals. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think that investors gradually realize that, say, if you're an investor for the next 10 years, what you don't want to own is, say, a 30-year U.S. government bond. You don't want to own a 10-year U.S. government bond at a yield of 3.6%. So what else is there? You can buy stocks, you can buy precious metals, you can buy commodities. Commodities, the industrial ones and the agricultural ones and the stuff, are very volatile, and usually the supply response is relatively short. In other words, there's a shortage of wheat and soybeans, corn. Within 1 year, you can plant more. But in the case of precious metals, you can't do that. The same for oil. The supply response is very slow. And so the Chinese, if they could, they would buy all the American oil companies, Chevron, ExxonMobil, Marathon Oil, whatever it is, and BHP and Rio Tinto. But politically, these countries, I mean the U.S., Australia, Canada, will not allow the Chinese to do that. So what else do they want to do? They go and buy concessions in Venezuela, in Latin America, in general, and in Africa, Central Asia, and so forth and so on, and develop their own resource.
Mr. Faber, is it accurate to say that we're buying junk here in the U.S. with our money, they're buying real hard assets? Is it accurate that they own, that they're now producing over 90% of rare earth minerals, the Chinese?
That is correct.
Okay.
But the U.S. could produce much more. But the problem in the U.S. is that exploration, like generally speaking, capital spending, which means education, R&D, infrastructure, plants and equipment, was neglected.
Yes, sir.
Because the government's economic policy and the federal economic policy, the federal board's economic policy target consumption and not investment.
Yes, sir. We're almost out of time. In the last 3 minutes we have with you, are we in a global depression? Are we entering one? Or are we going to enter one? And just overall summing up the state of the world economy and...
You mentioned earlier on the word end game. We are in the end game, but we are currently in a cracker boom. A cracker boom is when you postpone a recession through money printing and credit growth. The credit growth is not strong in the private sector, but it's much worse. It's in the government sector, and the government is the most unproductive factor in economic life. And so this cracker boom will end very badly. But before it ends badly, we'll have money printing, very high inflation, and when everything fails, the U.S. will go to war. They are already in war, but they'll increase it.
Absolutely. And you're saying 2 to 4 years is the main vector zone?
Well, in my view, by printing money, you can postpone the evil, the end of the end game, for, say, 7 to 10 years.
Really?
In America, they did it between 1980 and 1989.
But now that the hangover is so much bigger, and it looks like everything is starting to accelerate so much faster. And you say we have dumb presidents. Well, it's just they're just looting the country. For the special.
They are deluding the country. They're lying.
Yes.
And the fact is simply this. For the typical household, and I'm not speaking here of the Goldman Sachs partners and Wall Street, but for the typical household, the median household, the average American, the standards of living have gone down.
Yes.
And they will continue to go down under the present economic policy.
And that's why they put a police state grid in preemptively. It's extremely premeditated. Well, Mr. Faber, the website's gloomboomdoom.com. We haven't had you on in about a year. I know you're very busy. I want to thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you so much, sir, and I look forward to speaking to you in the near future. Again, gloom, boom, doom.
So do I.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again soon, sir. Amazing information. Oh, boy, I tell you, and that guy is super high-powered, and his predictions are spot on. And we're not being negative here. It's best to know the truth and make preparations for it, isn't it? Woo!
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
You have found it, the front lines of the InfoWar. I'm Alex Jones, here live Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. We have the bombshell, huge, biggest revelations ever from Lindsey Williams on the geopolitical stratagem from his inside source, joining us tomorrow in T-minus 23 hours, 50 minutes from now. He will be joining us. He was on in the first hour. If anybody wants to get the podcast later today with a prelude, he pretty much told you a lot of it then. He's pretty shooken up. This stuff's real, folks. And his latest, not predictions, inside info is all coming true. So that's coming up. I want to go to Nathan, Tim, Joe, Ron, Scott, and others. The toll-free number to join us, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. And I do have a lot of news I want to get to. I'm going to recap that towards the end of the show, though, because I've been ranting and interviewing guests. I want to hear from you. But I'm always trying to take calls and then have them done quickly and for me not to babble for an hour when you ask a question. It's not really babble, but you know what I mean. So I'm going to try to keep these down to a minute and a half. I'm sure we'll fail, but we're trying. Venezuela denies Libyan leader Gaddafi en route. Yeah, because they probably don't want F-16s to blow it out of the sky. And an accidental air crash or maybe hit him with an energy beam and he'll have a stroke on board. Oh, they've got those in the C-130s and the DC-10s. Venezuela denies Libya's Gaddafi en route. But the British Foreign Secretary, William Hague, said earlier today that their word from inside Libya is he has taken off for Venezuela. But who knows? The London Telegraph a few hours ago reported Libyan Colonel Gaddafi flees to Venezuela as cities fall to protesters. Their parliament has been burning all day. TV stations getting torched, riots in Iraq, in the north and the central areas, gold surging, other commodities exploding, oil exploding. Meanwhile, the federal government's moving openly for internet kill switches, shutting up police state grids here as well. This has all been orchestrated. Again, the protests are real, and many of the people have reasons to be angry. The point is, why are they being triggered now? Okay. It doesn't mean that we are for Gaddafi or that we're for Hosni Mubarak. We don't like them. The point is the globalists want chaos. And this is what Williams told you 4 months ago in October. Now it's happening. This is what all the evidence shows. George Soros is all over this, and he's a bad guy, folks. So think ahead a couple more moves, and then think ahead a few more. Or just read the books written by Kissinger and the Council on Foreign Relations reports and where they brag about all of it. And sure, they may lose control of these, but they still get the chaos they want. But they're shaking up the bag to move us into this next crisis phase. Okay, let's go to Nathan in Oklahoma. Nathan, you're on the air.
All right. Hey, Alex, can you hear me all right?
Worldwide transmission, over.
All right.
Almighty, almighty, this is PBR Street Gang, over. You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. Well, thanks for taking my call. And one of the things I think that your callers can't say enough, you know, is that thank you for doing what you do. You know, I thought I was born into one of the most boring periods of human history, but come to find out it's one of the most pristine moments.
Now, the whole system, while they want us obsessed with Justin Bieber, whatever his name is, and Lady Boo Boo and all this other idiocy, that's also people are, I hear adults talking about Justin Bieber and see kids with copying his moronic haircut. I mean, that doesn't matter. This is one of the most important times ever. They got giant cyclotrons they're firing up. The Pentagon admits they're developing antimatter weapons. They're doing cross-species genetic planting and release of insects. They're releasing mosquitoes that forcibly vaccinate you. They're rolling out brain-altering vaccines. Total insanity. 2011, government surveillance blimps, artificial surveillance dragonflies and hummingbirds and training the military to mow citizens down and giant federalization, threat fusion center, command base. Is unrolling and FEMA camps openly being funded and total craziness from end to end. And the moron public who isn't awake, some are waking up and getting more awake, but the others are getting deeper in denial, running around talking about Justin Bieber. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you're good. And you're right. You know, we're in, you know, the largest awakening of the human, you know, the planet Earth has ever seen so far, which is, you know, a good thing. But I'll get to what I got to say. You covered that the globalists want to put chips in our brains, you know, on your last broadcast, well, I have some the most powerful information that I think would be good and this uprising and awakening of ours that we have yet to put to use.
Okay, well, tell us. Tell us the info.
All right. Well, it's our brain. And the first, I have two studies to tell you about. The first one is there's a book called Train Your Mind, Change Your Brain by Sharon Begley. Now, in 2001, Richard Davison, who is a scientist that studies neuroplasticity, tested his lab at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where he asked the Dalai Lama and another monk to come and be hooked up to an electroencephalogram, also known as the EEG machine, which measures and records the electrical activity of your brain. Now, at first, he had the monk not think of anything, and then he had him think of compassion. When he did this, the scales went off the charts with the amount of brain activity that was going
sure,
on.
Sure, no. I mean, that's not the only study. When the brain is in a loving, empathizing position, it's the highest level brain waves you can have. And that's absolutely right. Send that stuff over. I got to jump because I promised to get to a lot of callers, Nathan. Tim in Michigan. Tim, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex. Can you hear me?
Strike leader, you are live. We are V2. Go ahead.
Okay, Alex. Hey, how you doing today anyway? Listen, you know, I heard that gentleman say something about the U.S. printing money. I just wanted to get your answer to this. I am under the notion that as long as the U.S. remains this, you know, the standard, the money standard of the world, they can continue to print money. But once that they lose that position as the
world reserve currency,
right, that they will no longer be able just to print money.
So what the G20 has been doing in the last 5 years is concerted devaluation of all major currencies to try to hide the inflation, but that's not happening now. So it's forcing a rush into commodities, which then exacerbates things going up even higher on top of dollar devaluation to purchase, you know, vital resources, food, energy. And that also drives investors and governments into gold and silver. So that's why they just try to use a propaganda overlay while the elites hoard gold and silver to tell the public Justin Bieber doesn't like gold. And they go, well, Justin Bieber doesn't like it. It's a horrible investment. It's only gone up 400% in the last 10 years. Justin Bieber says don't get it. And they go, Justin Bieber says don't get it. And so they feel very genius, and they waddle around and watch their football games and suck their thumbs with pleasure. But, I mean, what's your question?
Okay, well, actually, you know, I got the chance to give my first public speech at a state town hall meeting on.
Why are you doing that? Just watch Justin Bieber, man. Come on. Lady Gaga. Come on, man.
Gaga came out in an egg, okay? I mean, that's more important than me trying to be telling people that you can be proactive. There is things you can do.
Oh, look, we're getting fluoride taken out all over the world. We're kicking their hind end. I appreciate your call, Tim. Exactly. Look, when you realize how fake it all is, the football, the basketball, the Lady Gaga, the Justin Bieber, you know, who gives you these carbon tax messages. They tell your kids they got to love Justin Bieber, and then Bieber says, hand in your guns, pass the Cybersecurity Act, and you know, the police state's good, and then your children are turned into mindless vassals who now they look up to some twit instead of looking up to Thomas Jefferson or looking up to Nikola Tesla or looking up to Magellan. I mean, kids, Magellan's a lot cooler than Justin Bieber. He circumnavigated with one ship the entire planet. He was killed by wild natives before they got back to Portugal, and when they got back, there was only like 11 people alive of the 200 and something crew, and the entire ship was rotting down to the waterline. That's destiny. That's will. That's striving. That's being a trailblazer, an explorer, going into space, mathematics, quantum mechanics, the secrets of the universe. It's all there. Life is fiery with its beauty, its incredible detail. Tuning into it. They want to shatter your mind talking about Justin Bieber. It's pure evil. They're taking your intellect, your soul, and giving you Michael Jordan and Bieber. Unlock your human potential. Defeat the globalists who want to shatter your mind, your doorways to perception. I want to see you truly live. I want to see you truly be who you are. Ah! I don't want my progeny who's coming, my unborn grandchildren and great-grandchildren, to live in this nightmare system these control freaks have created.
Last week, the head of the country's central bank floated the idea of dumping the greenback as the world's reserve currency, replacing it with an international currency.
Thousands of people gathered to hear Barack Obama deliver key foreign policy speech on his current European tour. His vision for America's place in a new world order.
Returning vets could be a risk to our nation.
We've got to give them a stake in creating the kind of world order that I think all of us would like to see.
And one of the ways it will drive the change is through global governance.
I think a new world order is emerging.
This is a hoax and a scam which is designed to transfer wealth and power from the private sector to the government sector and from the government of the United States to a world government.
And those people who have been yelling, oh, the UN's going to take over global
conspiracy
government.
Conspiracy theorists.
They've been crazy, but now they're right.
And who got the money? Hundreds and hundreds of banks, any bank or that has access to the U.S. Federal Reserve's discount.
They tell us who they are.
No.
You know, financial terrorism. They have the ability to tweak the knob.
I am proposing that the Federal Reserve be granted new authority.
The ultimate goal of the carbon tax and the cap and trade is to destroy production.
This energy tax is the largest tax increase in American history.
We're actually creating a global warming police. So number one, they can come in, the federal government can come in and inspect your house and send you the bill. We're setting up a global warming Gestapo.
One of the things that if you talk to our generals, they are desperate for is a civilian counterpart to our military forces.
I am fierce.
And this is what I wear.
Senator Barack Obama's presidential campaign is asking Missouri law enforcement to target anyone who lies or runs a misleading television ad.
I've now been in 57 states. I think one left to go.
The president, when he was in Europe last week, he met with the king of Saudi Arabia. He appeared to bow.
President Obama today proposed something new, something called prolonged detention. Pre-crime is where people are arrested and incarcerated to prevent crimes that they have not yet committed.
It's the World Wrestling Federation. It's the Washington Wrestling Federation. They put on this show that they're bitter rivalries, you know, villains, and they really don't like each other. But behind closed doors, they buddy up for a drink and make deals.
Both the Republican and Democratic parties are owned by the same global elites. And on issues that matter to those global elites, they act as one.
They've wrapped themselves in the American flag, and they've talked about preserving American heritage and principles, and all the while, they're working to merge us into a new world order where our sovereignty will be destroyed, we'll lose all connection with our American heritage.
With Bush, you knew exactly what you were getting. It was, there was no iron fist in a velvet glove. It was just the iron fist. Whereas with Obama, you've got the velvet glove and the iron fist. You know, a very sharp guy, very smooth, knows exactly what he's doing. For that reason, far more dangerous than Bush.
Well, at the end of last year, I was willing to give Obama the benefit of the doubt. I thought it was premature to write this guy off. But now that he's been in office for a while, it's obvious that he is very tight with the Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan's on Wall Street, and he is extremely compliant and pliant to the wishes of the large banks, going back to what we saw with Robert Rubin under the Clinton administration, changing laws in favor of the banks, and he's not doing anything to stop the banks. He's helping the banks continue to do what they were doing under Bush. So, in fact, he's just a continuation of Bush on the subject of markets and finance, which is the most important part of his policy right now.
People who voted for Obama wanted real change and are getting platitudes, are getting a lot of nice talk.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
And loaded, ready to go. Thank you so much for joining us. It is Wednesday, the 23rd day of February, 2011. Incredible interview with Lindsey Williams yesterday. We're doing part two of that live with even more revelations of how the globalists have orchestrated the collapse in the Middle East to then break their deal with the Arabs to not develop the massive oil reserves in North America. They had a deal set up in the 70s where they would not allow massive development of oil on public lands in Alaska, in Colorado, in Utah, and in many other areas. Texas is a state that rebelled and didn't go along with it. That's why it's one of the few states that continued to develop its reserves that are nothing compared to Alaska. And that's the double cross of the Arabs. But then that leads to the death of the dollar by the end of 2012 from his inside sources, known to us, by the way. One of them, Ken Fromm, died in December. The other, even more high-powered, we just call him Mr. L., former CEO of a major oil company. He'll be joining us to discuss that more and take your phone calls in the third hour. Porter Stansberry on the death of the dollar. He was on with us a few months ago. He predicted so much of now what is beginning to accelerate and unfold. There's reasons that we're seeing riots all over the world now and demonstrations in the West is because the standard of living is plunging right now. And the media is saying, oh, it's a boom time. The economy's great. Recession ended almost 2 years ago. Everything's wonderful. Everything's wonderful. But you're seeing what they've tried to paper over. Coming out, from behind the edges. So it's going to get more and more crazy. We're going to be breaking that down. Also, I had a caller on Monday who said, Alex, I read in a report. I really need to take this call. Stuff is getting so crazy and so busy. I'm just not going to take it, even though it's super important. Hey, can I call you back during the break? Okay, I'll call you back in 10. Thanks. Can't ignore that phone call. It deals with the show. Sorry. Doing some producer work myself, so I have to deal with that. We had a caller who was saying that he had read somewhere but didn't see any bibliographed linkage that the U.S. government is training with foreign governments to occupy the U.S. with foreign troops. And I just off the top of my head said, well, if you watch my film Road to Tyranny, we have the Associated Press and Toronto Star and other news articles on the screen where in 2002 they signed agreements to use Mexican and Canadian troops in the United States for, quote, civil unrest and terrorism, to fight foreign domestic terrorists and for civil uprisings. That's in the NLE09 drill. Just put in NLE09, the first link you get. In fact, let's just put it on screen for folks watching on PrisonPlanet.tv. Is FEMA putting a press release out how they were working with all these foreign governments to track and suppress terrorists during an uprising in the U.S. Then, of course, there's the quotes by different generals that we've played on the air. What Wesley Clark's one of them. Also, Colonel Craig Roberts' nephew going out of West Point was given an internal briefing with several hundred of the cadets. And then after, Roberts has told the story many times, then later he was given another briefing once he was out of the training and in the official military that, yes, foreign assets would be used during uprisings in the United States because corrupt systems always try to use outside forces because even if you can get 30, 40, 50% of your troops to fire on their own citizens, or even if you fly New Yorkers down to Texas or Texans up to Wisconsin, a lot of times countries will try to. We saw this during the uprising in Tiananmen Square. It took them about a day and a half to respond because they shipped in troops from several, 400, 500 miles away from a totally different province where they even spoke a different Chinese dialect to make sure they weren't shooting mommy and daddy and brother and sis and their cousin. And so I really should do some more research on this or re-go over research to recodify it and do a special report on it. And I said last week I'd do a special report this week on the fact that we've been completely vindicated by governmental and private reports dealing with the anthrax attacks being an inside job. That was just in the Washington Post last week. I mean, there's so much evidence I can't even get over all the information that we have here. I mean, I can't even go over all of it myself. It's just pouring in. But looking at news this morning that the crew printed off for me, I noticed a Canada.com news report. And in fact, this didn't print the whole story. But you guys print me the rest. Thank you. This is out of the Ottawa Citizen, one of the biggest national papers. It's the paper there in the capital city of Ottawa in Canada. And here's the headline. Canada, U.S. agree to use each other's troops in civil emergencies. And I mentioned Monday that during the Olympics last year, U.S. troops were in the major cities where the Olympics were taking place in Canada. And that was all over the news. And U.S. troops and Canadian troops were patrolling the bar districts. So they used special events to acclimate you to this, like having troops at the Kentucky Derby or troops at the Super Bowl. And then they just start rolling them out everywhere. But there's the Ottawa Citizen. Canada, U.S. agree to use each other's troops in civil emergencies. Canada and the U.S. have signed an agreement. By the way, they signed it 8 years ago. This is an expansion that paves the way for the militaries from each other's nations to send troops across each other's borders during an emergency. But some are questioning why the Harper government has kept silent on the deal. Well, 8 years ago when it was announced in the AP and the Washington Post, and Toronto Star as well, it was in the Mexican newspapers, because they're not just going to use Mexican and Canadian troops here, they're going to use them in Canada and Mexico. It's all vice versa, each other's armies inside each other's countries. And under the agreement, it was a North American Union agreement for North American Security Perimeter 2002. Then it was signed under executive treaty, which is unconstitutional. Congress didn't ratify it, by George W. Bush, Vicente Fox, and who was the Prime Minister of Canada at the time? It'll pop in my head in a minute. The point is they signed it at Baylor, about 90 miles north of me up here in Waco, and then the treaty was secret. I mean, it was on record, secret treaty, and there was almost no news coverage of it. But then Judicial Watch and others sued and were able to get not the treaty, but the SPP meeting from 2006 at Banff, Canada, where they were reading over sections of the treaty. So we got most of it from the minutes. And at that Banff Canada meeting, you had over 500 CEOs from Europe and North America and Asia. And they ratified the plan for the SPP, the ongoing plan, and then ordered the heads of the different state departments of the countries to execute it. And, I mean, in the thousands of pages Judicial Watch got and posted on their site, and we boil it down and cover it in Endgame, and there's a bibliography of it in whatistheendgame.com. Everything in the film has a bibliography online where you check every minute of the film. It has links and documents. That's why I'm always freaking out. This is so big. This is so out in the open now. And it said we're going to call it a North American security perimeter, but we've got to integrate our nations by stealth because this is very unpopular politically. And in there, they said they would use the threat of terrorism, natural disaster, the flu, other biological problems. They said that they would use that as a way to sell the public in the future on accepting having each other's militaries in each other's countries. And WorldNet Daily covered it, Judicial Watch covered it, we covered it. Coast to Coast AM covered, a few others did, but really nobody else. But the point I'm making to the caller from Monday is he said on the spot, give me documentation, and I gave him from memory a lot of places where he could get it. But, I mean, here's February 22nd, yesterday. I got it this morning without even looking. I mean, I see this stuff every month or so, sometimes more often, where they admit that it is to suppress insurrection. I mean, go read it. It's the National Paper of Canada.
We now take you live
to the Central Texas Command Center
in the heart of the resistance. You're listening to the Alex Jones Show.
Absolutely, Mancow joining us in about 5 minutes, and I'm going to start getting into the Rumsfeld clips ahead of him joining us. But finishing up that story, why it's so important, here's the nice lady been, you know, cutting my hair on and off for about a year. And she just brings up out of the blue TSA with her boyfriend flying back from, I think it was North Carolina, she said, and he went through the scanner, and he was waiting to then be patted down. They were patting down everybody who went through the scanner, she said. he told her, and he put his hands in his pockets, just standing around. A lot of people do that, and they were like, get your hands out of your pockets right now. Get them out. Get them out. Get over. You got to go back through the scanner. You're hiding something. And they put him back through the scanner and then patted him down and were just being really mean to him, like he was a prisoner on a bus who'd just been taken out of the county jail, being sent to San Quentin or Huntsville. And you're rolling up, and that's exactly how they treat you at a rough prison. I mean, from what I've read, even low-security prisons, they're not that rude or mean to you. Not even so much medium, but high security. You know, they let you know, they humiliate you, they strip you down. And in some cases, TSA strips you down in public or takes you in a back room while they rob your suitcase of money. I mean, just every day, multiple articles of them being caught stealing wedding rings, cash, jewelry, electronics. I mean, it is just an orgy of theft that's going on. And this is the public being trained how to be prisoners. But they're not going to put up with it forever. They're not going to break the will of the American people. Now, we're only going to briefly have Mancow on. Then I'm going to get into patent nervous system manipulation from television monitors and how that ties in to this other report that we covered a few months ago. Ceiling lights in Minnesota send code internet data, but then we've got the patents on similar systems that flash at a level not perceptible by the eye but to the brain and can actually manipulate you with that. I mean, this is confirmed. You know, the old thing of how a hypnotist with a flashing light or the swinging watch, this is much more high-tech than that, and they can actually make you throw up. They can do anything they want with this. And now through data, through power lines, they can do it with the fluorescent bulbs. That's why they've unified these worldwide. You notice worldwide, these are going in. Governments pass the laws to get in line with the UN Agenda 21, and they're toxic. If one breaks in your house, you've got to evacuate it and open the windows and call a toxin control team, poison control team. They're getting rid of phosphorescent because these are systems literally for mind control, and it's hidden in plain view. That's coming up. But first, here's the big news. Donald Rumsfeld, imagine this. Donald Rumsfeld, former Secretary of Defense, out pushing his book, went on Mancow Muller's syndicated broadcast that's on all over the country, including WABC in New York. And he says, hey, what about Building 7? What about Building 7? We're going to play that short clip first. And Rumsfeld says, never heard of it. Don't know anything about it. Now, this was a CIA state federal command base with the Army Defense Intelligence in it, FBI, the command center for that entire area of the East Coast. They're running a drill of it being attacked that day. That's why they'd move the command centers out on the pier and the mobile command centers. That's ABC News reporting that. And Rumsfeld says he never heard of it. He says, building what? That's why it's called the Building What campaign. The ads running in New York that have gotten Geraldo Rivera to wake up and come out and say he questions Building 7 and Judge Andrew Napolitano because they have honor, especially Napolitano. Because last night I was picking up some Mexican food to bring home. I do that quite often. I have to add to my gut. And I was walking out, and a fellow walked over to me and said, you know, I'm a mainline conservative, but you woke me up. My dad didn't believe in 9/11 being an inside job, but I showed him the footage of Building 7 imploding, and you know he was a Navy SEAL / UDT, his dad, and he said, that's a controlled demolition. Yeah, they blew it. I mean, that's all you got to do is watch Building 7. So that's why, I mean, look at Jesse Ventura, UDT, Navy SEAL, saying the same thing. Anybody who knows sees that, but then we have all the footage of them saying, get back, we're going to blow up 7. We have the local newscast saying they're thinking about bringing the building down. Let's go ahead and play this 20-second clip, and there's a longer one coming up, with the former Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, on Mancow's radio show. The audio is also at mancow.com. Here it is.
Building 7, I often hear about. No plane hit Building 7. Why did Building 7 come down? What do you tell people?
What is Building 7?
Or what, was it Building 5, or the building that wasn't hit by the plane? Building 7.
I have no idea. I've never heard that.
Oh. Do a talk radio show. Oh, you'll hear it.
There's a longer clip coming up. Mancow, do you really believe that a 47-story building, it would be the biggest building in over 40 states, several hundred yards away, not hit by a falling building, fires start in it, it collapses at 5:25 in the afternoon, CNN, the police are on tape saying, get back, they're going to blow up that building. I can play that clip if you want to hear it. And Rumsfeld magically doesn't know about the main CIA building on the East Coast outside Langley blowing up and collapsing that day at free fall speed.
Oh, my my God, Alex. I'm walking through TJ Maxx with my kids. What are you asking me?
You sent me the Building 7 clip yesterday.
Yes.
I was on your show today. You brought it up to me. You said this is really starting to make you question things.
Here's the deal. I feel like the Jedi mind trick was done on me. How could he not know? I couldn't wrap my mind around it. You don't even know how to respond. It's kind of like you walk in with your wife and she's with another guy and you say, hey, honey, what's going on? And she says, well, what guy? There's no guy here. But I can see the guy. I mean, it was just bizarre. I mean, look, he was very friendly. You saw him on Letterman. He was very friendly on Letterman as well. He was a very friendly guy. But how does he not know Building 7 came down? It defies everything, doesn't it?
Well, you can hear how he suddenly, because I've heard the rest of the interview, he's a lot more energetic. He just gets real quiet and goes, no, I don't know anything about that. I mean, that's got lie written all over it.
Well, how does he not know Building 7? Excuse me. How does he not know Building 7? I mean, what do you make of that?
Well, ManCal, they never want to talk about Building 7. They never paid any attention to it. I've got scores, and I've played them here over and over again. We've written articles about it with CNN, local CBS, local Fox. Amy Goodman was there, and they're told to run. It's going to blow up. And the cops are saying, get back. It's about to come down. They're going to bring down that building. Silverstein goes on PBS a year later and says, we gave the order to pull it and then watch the building come down.
Well, look, I've heard the stories. It was a planned demolition, right? They were going to bring it down. Now I've heard that, and now they're claiming that that another building fell on it. Although that's not really what happened, is what you say and others say. So where are you headed with this? Are you saying that Rumsfeld and Bush and Bove and all these characters were in on it? That they brought down all these buildings?
Well, you know, we have to ask the question, why are they acting stupid? Why is it on record that they said they were going to blow it up? BBC, 25 minutes before, on BBC World and BBC 24, simultaneously with the same script with their teleprompter readers on two different BBCs, said Building 7, the Solomon Brothers building, has fallen. It's completely collapsed. And there they are live with it right behind them. It hasn't collapsed. Then they denied that they even did that. Then years later, BBC said, yes, we were told by Reuters it had collapsed. This is what's happening. It's kind of like Lee Harvey Oswald. 2 hours before his name was released, about an hour before he was even captured, running around Dallas, they got their time zones wrong. And in New Zealand, Australia, and several other countries, newspapers ran with his photo and his name that he was the shooter of John F. Kennedy when it wasn't even on the news here yet. They had their story and their script ready, and they jumped the gun. They jumped the gun.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week, which is the way he wants it. Well, he gets it. I don't like it.
Waging war on corruption. It's Alex Jones.
Look at your young men fighting. Look at your women crying. Look at your young men dying the way they've always done before.
News networks and watching how things are done. I mean, just, and this is not going to really help you with your show. I just find it interesting that every time I'm with a crowd, and I was at CPAC, and, you know, Ron Paul won 30%. I mean, he won and then some. Other people were getting 2 and 3%, and that's who we hear about on TV. Ron Paul killed at CPAC, and all we hear about is Romney. I've broken bread with Romney. I've hung out with Romney. He's a nice enough fella. He's unelectable as president. And if the Republicans, their main thing seems to be against health care, blah, blah care. And yet that's what Romney gave us in Minnesota.
So Romney wrote it. Romney wrote it.
Yeah, so look, there's a lot that is very odd to me. I I see it's like Building 7. Building 7 came down. No, it didn't. These aren't the droids you're looking for. Ron Paul, in every one of these polls, wins, and you and I are both friends with Ron Paul, so maybe that distorts our view, I like him politically. But it's just amazing. Romney is a guaranteed loser, and that's who they're going to run, and they keep telling us Romney, Romney, Romney. It reminds me of Giuliani. Remember Giuliani? Remember Fred Thompson?
Yeah, they're putting a horse that can't win in. It's like a Don King fight where he puts a fighter in that couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag against Tyson. But expanding on that analogy, and I know you got to go, but this is important, man, Cal. Expanding on that, he only won by 2 points last year. He won by 7 points, totally creaming Romney in second place. And I was listening to the radio news feed that this network, Genesis, carries, and they didn't even report the Monday after that Ron Paul had won. They talked about was Mitt Romney. And so I just, exactly. I mean, it's like the Super Bowl and, a team wins.
Yeah.
And then they don't even tell you about the team that won the Super Bowl. They tell you about the team that lost and imply that they won.
Yeah. Hey, it is the Generals versus the Globetrotters, and yet they keep running the Generals. Hey, Bud, let me tell you, here in Chicago, what happened yesterday.
Oh, yeah. All this election fraud. I mean, let me stop you. Talk about it. Magically record voting problems and the gangster Rahm Emanuel he's in. Tell us.
Yeah. Well, look, you have a it's so big, Alex. It's so big. And I don't want to insult your listeners, but it's so big, I don't even know how to put it into radio terms. And this is what I do for a living. Let me try to make it simple. This guy, Rod Blagojevich, came out and said, look, they're crooks. They want to jack up your taxes. They want to steal from you. I won't let them. They're going to dummy up something to try to destroy me. I thought, well, that guarantees our taxes aren't going to go up. They jacked up our taxes 67%. They keep telling us this guy's a crook. The courts freed him. A jury said, no, this guy isn't a crook at all. And immediately, they screamed out in court, retrial! And, of course, the government has endless funds to go after people. They've never proven anything against this guy. Look, I live in Illinois. All these guys are crooks, but they haven't been able to prove anything on this kid. So he says he's going to talk. And if he talks, the House of Obama comes down. Barry's House of Cards comes forward.
Well, listen, he better talk now because Ron Brown, the Commerce Secretary, was going to go down. He said, I'm going to talk. And they shot him in the head and blew the airplane up.
In the back of his head.
And had the special forces blow the hatch and helo, high low out of the plane.
Do you have time for me to finish here?
Yes, go ahead.
So the Daley family, Mayor Daley, a famous name in Chicago, he's going to step down. His brother replaces Rahm Emanuel. Rahm Emanuel, the head of the White House, is coming to Chicago. I know for a fact the number one guy, and he's a great man. He's a great man, okay? And maybe someday I'll talk about it. I gave him my word that I would not. And I'm telling you, the guy that would have been the next mayor of Chicago that is a great man got a personal call from his old political buddy Obama, and Obama said, look, you can't run. Do not run. And this guy decided not to, and I don't know what kind of... I don't know what was said, what was promised, if there was threats. Alex, I don't know. My point is, here comes Rahm Emanuel to make sure all the bodies stay buried, figuratively. Blagojevich are going to make sure he doesn't talk. They want to make sure they protect, I believe, and I study this and I live this, guys. I believe they want to protect the House of Cards that is the Obama administration. They don't want the truth to come out. And this election, less than half a million people voted in Chicago. Wow.
Well, I've got the reports pouring out of Chicago of massive fraud and people saying that the fix was in. But we all know there's never election fraud in Chicago.
The old joke is the dead vote. I don't know that it's very funny, but that's what everybody talks about.
All right, man, Cal, finishing up here, and I want to get reports. I know you're very busy.
Yeah.
You know, soon, our man in Chicago is Eric Mancal Mueller, mancal.com. But in closing, going back to Rumsfeld, I mean, look, you asked me today on your show, what is a 9/11 truther? Well, it runs the gamut. But all I know is that Norman Panetta, the transportation secretary, was in the bunker with Cheney 45 minutes earlier than Cheney said he was, and testified before Congress that Cheney basically ordered a stand down of the F-16s to not shoot down Flight 77 or whatever supposedly went over or into the Pentagon. And so all I'm saying is, man, I'll send you, like you sent me the clip of Rumsfeld, we appreciate it. I'll send you the articles we've written with a bunch of video clips of cops and people going, get back, they're going to blow up Building 7. And it was on the news that, well, we may bring it down. They blew it up. And now Rumsfeld tells you, I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, come on.
Okay, look, Alex, let's send me the audio. I want it. Okay, but look, let's skip everything, okay? Let's skip everything you just said. Can we skip that for a second?
Sure.
Okay. How about just the fact that Building 7 in New York came down on 9/11 and he doesn't know about it? I mean, let's just start there. And then when your mind starts racing and you start connecting the dots, it is a frightening proposition. You follow what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. That he's there playing dumb, caught like Sylvester with the canary in his mouth.
Yeah, he's spitting out feathers. He's spitting out feathers. Well, look, I hear a lot about your program, and I always love when you're on my show. It's you make me think, and I don't know that I like that.
Well, facts are facts, man, Cal. We appreciate your courage.
I think I'm going to have to turn on CNN so I feel better about the country again.
Well, but I mean, look, I mean, it's just like Andrew Napolitano has come out and said he doesn't believe the official story. That's a big deal. He got attacked for it. Now we've seen, after he looked at Building 7 footage, we've now seen Geraldo Rivera come out and say he now wants to look at it. Yeah. That shows that you guys are honorable and will at least say, wow, this stinks to high heaven. ManCal.com. Thank you for giving us the audio. We're going to play a longer clip of Rumsfeld coming back,
right,
but I'm going to let you get back to your family, and I'll see you next Wednesday when I have my spot on your show. I appreciate you having me on, Eric.
Thank you, Alex. God bless.
There he goes. All right, take care, buddy. Great job. Okay, we're going to go out to break with the Donald Rumsfeld clip. In fact, let's just go ahead and hit that clip now. Here is the clip of Rumsfeld on ManCal 2 days ago.
You're such a serious guy. People, I don't think, realize I've been around you several times. You have a great sense of humor. What do you watch? What makes you laugh? I'd be curious.
Well, you know that...
NBC Nightly News?
No. The last movie I saw was Secretariat.
I wanted it to be The Hangover or something like that.
No, but I don't watch movies much. I don't know why. I mostly read history books and biographies.
Yeah.
TV shows. I tell you, I watch some news, and I watch sports.
All right, folks.
Just as I would expect.
I'll tell you what we're going to do, because we're running up against the break, and I skipped too many breaks. We're going to come back, play the short clip, then play a longer clip, and then analyze this. And I've got Stansberry Research coming up, incredible intel on the dollar, the economy. Part two, live interview with more information with Lindsey Williams coming up the third hour. Then we go into the fourth hour, Overdrive with James Corbett, the Corbett Report. And we've got a huge guest. You quite frankly probably can't get a bigger guest for Media Explosion than I've got tomorrow.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
This is a big deal. I cannot stress to you, the listeners of the syndicated radio broadcast and those watching as we simulcast at PrisonPlanet.tv in video living color, that Obama's speech last night saying we in the past days have been preparing an international response into Libya. You notice they used the cover of Egypt to move in a couple more aircraft carriers and big task force groups. Oil prices have gone up more than, $27 this week. They're up to $119 right now. We haven't seen oil prices at the gas pump this high since 2008. And they are preparing globalist-backed units in Benghazi to try to invade Tripoli. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that they believe he has nerve gas and high-tech missiles that he's going to try to use. Now, I want to pull back from this and look at the larger geopolitical ramifications, because every political analyst who we have had on this show, we only have people on who've been right about 95% of the time, people who really know what's happening in the world, and folks that their information matches my research, but then they can take us even further because of their specialities in those areas, are concurring, and we're saying years ago, months ago, you've heard them here, that there would be a destabilization campaign in the Middle East, that it was a new kamikaze mode. Instead of just invading Afghanistan or Iraq or encircling Pakistan and inserting special ops, they now caught a CIA guy there, reportedly. The news is saying that he was trying to give fissile material, nuclear material to Al-Qaeda. That's groups they control, again, as a pretext to invade Pakistan. I mean, this is getting wild. Now it's 100% clear what's happening. Doesn't mean Hosni Mubarak's good. It doesn't mean that Muammar Gaddafi's good. It doesn't mean that the people running Saudi Arabia are good. No, they're bad. And it's a political climate, an atmosphere, where the globalists can knock the dominoes over. The question is, why do they want that? Now, I haven't talked or even read in the last few days. I probably should have, but I get so busy. What Wayne Madsen thinks about this. I know he predicted a lot of this years ago and again months ago on the show. Formerly anti-submarine warfare expert. Worked then in the NSA and a lot of other classified areas. He's written for some of the biggest magazines and newspapers in the nation, WayneMadsenReport.com. He reports on national security and international issues for major TV stations around the world. And he also reports routinely from what's happening at the National Press Club. So I don't know what he's going to say about what's happening in Tripoli or what's happening in Egypt or this domino effect or Saudi Arabia handing out $37 billion in a single day to people yesterday and the king having to come back to Saudi Arabia from his European pleasure palaces worried about overthrow. But this, I believe, is the clear double cross of the more friendly Arab regimes or the more neutral ones to put things into an order out of chaos situation. And I predicted they would then blame the depression on this. And now I saw headlines the last 2 days that, oh, this is going to kill the recovery. Oh, we're going to have a depression because of this. Oh, the oil prices are going up because of this. No, the underlying situation is dollar devaluation. So for the next 30 minutes, we're joined by Wayne Madsen and Wayne Madsen Report. Wayne, you've heard me in the last 3 minutes break down my analysis of this and the horror of the prospect of UN, NATO, U.S.-backed forces going into Tripoli. Give us your take on what you think.
Well, I still believe that what we're seeing in North Africa, especially North Africa, was triggered by the same forces that triggered the anti-government, anti-austerity moves in Greece, where we had riots there again. Over the austerity measures, the budget cuts in the last few days, we saw it in Spain, we saw it in the UK, and I think this is what really was seething under the under all the other problems we had in North Africa. Now, we know from the State Department cables, from WikiLeaks, that obviously the NGOs, the Soros-backed groups, the National Endowment for Democracy, the Freedom House, and these other NGOs that are always in there trying to stir up the opposition, were involved in all these countries.
Oh, they but admit they are. They're bragging now, Wayne.
Yeah, but I think where they miscalculated is they thought with the Jasmine Revolution in Tunisia and the Lotus Revolution in Egypt that these were going to be soft landing type changeovers like they saw in Ukraine and a few of these other soft revolutions, but they miscalculated because of the unemployment and the high food prices and the disgust, especially amongst the young people, about these regimes. These exploded, and I believe that they're not under control anymore. We know there were signs that Gaddafi last month was thinking about succession. Now, his son, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, I've written about this. This guy was a sweetheart as far as the elites of Europe were concerned. He's a good friend of Lord Peter Mandelson, the former British business secretary. He's very good friends with Prince Andrew and also very good friends with Nathaniel Rothschild, the scion of the Rothschild family. This is the crowd he traveled with. He's a graduate of the London School of Economics. But now we heard him defending his father on TV, talking about, you'll be, shot if you are caught with weapons and all this type of thing. This is out of control. I was in Gaddafi's tent in Tripoli in October 2009, and it was the 40th anniversary of the coup, which he calls his Green Revolution, and overthrew the king. But I find it interesting last month, Gaddafi gave back royal property seized from the king's family. This King Idris al-Senussi. Now, the Senussis were from Benghazi, Cyrenaica. That's the area that has broken away. So I believe that Gaddafi probably understood that there were rumblings in Libya that his days were short, and he was looking at succession, possibly a role for the former royal family who he had deposed in 69. Now, we don't know where they stand, but I think it's very instructive that the flag being used by the opposition is the royal flag.
Okay, Wayne, we got you on short notice. You're on your cell phone. I'm going to wait a moment until it comes back and gets a little bit better. But the big issue I want to bring up to you, what do you make of Obama's incredible speech? I mean, this is war under another name. He says, we're preparing an intervention. We're preparing international forces to go in. And now they're reporting, the Wall Street Journal and others, that Gaddafi's, I believe it, I know he's got it, heavily armed, is going to try to use nerve gas on him. And I mean, this is a nightmare.
Well, the Wall Street Journal, I'm always skeptical about them. They're neocons from the word go. We also have his justice minister who resigned, saying that Gaddafi was totally behind Lockerbie, when we know to the contrary, it was Iran. Of course, George H.W. Bush found it convenient to blame Gaddafi because he didn't want Iran getting involved with plans to go into Iraq during the lead up to Desert Storm. So there's a lot of people in who have left Gaddafi's regime who, for one reason or another, they're sort of like those old Soviet defectors. They always would overstate the threat.
Like all the Iraqi defectors that we now know were paid to lie.
Oh, absolutely, like curveball. So I would take some of what these guys are saying with a grain of salt about Gaddafi having bio and chemical weapons. After all, he allowed inspectors in there under the Bush administration, the last administration, to turn all that stuff over. So these people are obviously trying to score political points more with the Western media. But it was quite clear when I was in Tripoli that Gaddafi, who gave a speech today where he's talking about he's no different than the Queen of England or the King of Thailand. He's just a figurehead. He has no real power. Well, when you first land in Tripoli, you see his portrait is everywhere. Huge portraits on the sides of buildings, over the overpasses on the highways going into Tripoli, in hotels, in lobbies, in offices, everywhere. You find Gaddafi looking down at you. And
kind of like Janet Napolitano on the high-tech right. Telescreens going in 9,000 locations. Another telltale sign of classical corruption in 1984 societies.
Right, and it's clear that this was a dictatorship, a cult of personality, like in North Korea with Kim Jong-il. And the other thing I noted is people even close to Gaddafi would talk about him. It was clear that even the people in his regime did not like him. As a matter of fact, I asked him when I was in his tent, I said, what's with that guy? I know he doesn't drink, but it's clear he's... Is he on medication, thinking maybe the guy's ill? And they just smiled. He said, hashish. Apparently, so he said today, he said, oh, these kids out there involved in the rebellion are on hallucinogenic drugs, when he should look in a mirror and he'd see the picture of somebody who's on drugs.
You can look at him, Wayne, and tell that he's on some hardcore drugs.